Chapter 34. He Who Comes with the Dawn. The dawn shadows shortened and paled as Rand and Matt jogged across the barren, still dark valley floor, leaving fog-shrouded Roydian behind. The dry air hinted at heat to come, but the slight breeze actually felt cool to Rand with no coat. That would not last. Full blistering daylight would be on them soon enough. They hurried as best they could in the hope of beating it, but he did not think they would. Their best was not very fast. Matt trotted in a pained shamble. A dark smear fanned across half his face, and his coat hung open, revealing his unlaced shirt, stuck to his chest by more drying blood. Sometimes he gingerly touched the thick weal around his throat, nearly black now, growling under his breath, and he stumbled often, catching himself with the odd, black-hafted spear and clutching at his head. He did not complain, though, which was a bad sign. Matt was a great complainer at small discomforts. If he was silent now, it meant he was in real pain. The old, half-healed wound in Rand's side felt as though something were boring into it, and the gashes on his face and head burned. Yet lumbering along, half-hunched over his aching side, he hardly thought of his own hurts. He was all too conscious of the sun rising behind him and the Aiel waiting on the bare mountainside ahead. There was water and shade up there, and help for Matt. The rising sun behind and the Aiel ahead. Dawn and the Aiel. He Who Comes with the Dawn. That Aes Sedai he had seen, or dreamed he had seen, before Roydian, she had spoken as if she had the foretelling. He will bind you together. He will take you back and destroy you. Words delivered like prophecy. Destroy them. Prophecy said he would break the world again. The idea horrified him. Perhaps he could escape that part, at least. But war, death, and destruction already welled up in his footsteps. Tyr was the first place in what seemed a very long time where he had not left chaos behind, men dying and villages burning. He found himself wishing he could climb on Jiaden and run as fast as the stallion could carry him. It was not the first time. But I can't run, he thought. I have to do it because there isn't anybody else who can. I do it, or the Dark One wins. A hard bargain, but the only one there was. But why would I destroy the Aiel? How? That last thought chilled him. It was too much like accepting that he would, that he should. He did not want to harm the Aiel. Light, he said harshly. I don't want to destroy anybody. His mouth felt lined with dust again. Matt glanced at him silently, a wary look. I am not mad yet, Rand thought grimly. Upslope, the Aiel were stirring in the three camps. The cold fact was, he needed them. That was why he had begun to contemplate this, back when he first discovered that the Dragon Reborn and He Who Comes with the Dawn might well be one and the same. He needed people he could trust, people who followed from something besides fear of him, or greed for power. People who did not mean to use him for their own ends. He had done what was required, and now he would use them. Because he had to. He was not mad yet. He did not think he was, but many would think so before he was done. Full glaring sunlight overtook them before they began to scramble up Jayendare. Heat like a club. Rand climbed the uneven slope as fast as he could manage, with its dips and rises and rough outcrops. His throat had forgotten its last drink, and the sun dried his shirt as fast as sweat could moisten it. Matt needed no urging either. There was water up there. Bear stood in front of the Wise One's low tents, a water bag in her hands, glistening with condensation. Licking cracked lips, Rand was sure he could see the glisten.
Where is he? What have you done to him?
The roar stopped Rand in his tracks. The flame-haired man, Culloden, stood atop a thick thumb of granite jutting out from the mountain. Others of the Shido clan clustered around its base, all looking at Rand and Matt. Some were veiled.
"Who are you talking about?" Rand called back.
His voice croaked with thirst. Culloden's eyes bulged in outrage.
"Muradin, wetlander! He entered 2 days before you, yet you come out first. He could not fail where you survive. You must have murdered him."
Rand thought he heard a shout from the Wise One's tents, but before he could even blink, Culloden uncoiled like a snake, casting a spear straight at him. Two more streaked behind it from the Aiel at the base of the granite thumb. Instinctively, Rand snatched for Saidin and the flame-carved sword. The blade whirled in his hands. Whirlwind on the Mountain, aptly named, slicing a pair of spear shafts in two. Matt's spinning black spear just barely knocked the third aside.
"Proof!" Culloden howled. "They entered Ruidian armed. It is forbidden. Look at the blood on them. They have murdered Muradin."
Even as he spoke, he hurled another spear, and this time it was one of a dozen. Rand flung himself aside, just conscious of Matt leaping the other way. Yet even before they hit the ground, the spears came together where Rand had been standing, bouncing off each other. Rolling to his feet, he found the spears all stuck into the stony ground, in a perfect circle surrounding the spot he had jumped from. For a moment, even Culloden seemed stunned to stillness.
"Stop!"
Bear shouted, running down into the motionless instant. Her long, bulky skirt impeded her no more than her age. She bounded down the slope like a girl for all her white hair, and a girl in a fury at that.
"The piece of Ruidian, Culloden!"
Her thin voice was an iron rod.
"Twice you have tried to break it now. Once more, and you are outlawed. My word on it. You, and anyone else who lifts a hand."
She skidded to a halt in front of Rand, facing the Shido with the water bag raised as if she meant to bludgeon them with it.
"Let who doubts me raise a weapon. That one will be deprived of shade according to the agreement of Ruidian, denied hold or stand or tent. His own sept will hunt him as a wild beast."
Some of the Shido hastily unveiled their faces, some of them, but Culloden was not dissuaded.
"They are armed, Bear. They went armed to Ruidian. That is, silence!"
Bear shook a fist at him.
"You dare speak of weapons? You who would break the peace of Ruidian and kill with your face bare to the world? They took no weapon with them. I attest to it."
Deliberately, she turned her back, but the gaze she swept across Rand and Matt was hardly softer than what she had given Culloden. She grimaced at Matt's strange sword-bladed spear, muttering,
"Did you find that in Ruidian, boy?"
"I was given it, old woman," Matt growled back hoarsely. "I paid for it, and I mean to keep it."
She sniffed.
"You both look as if you had rolled in knife grass." "What? No, you can tell me later."
Eyeing Rand's power-wrought sword, she shivered.
"Rid yourself of that, and show them the signs before that fool Culloden tries to whip them up again. With this temper on him, he would take his whole clan into outlawry without blinking. Quickly!"
For a moment, he gaped at her. Signs? Then he remembered what Ruark had shown him once, the mark of a man who had survived Ruidian. Letting the sword vanish, he unlaced his left shirt cuff and pushed the sleeve back to his elbow. Around his forearm wound a shape like that on the dragon banner, a sinuous, golden-maned form scaled in scarlet and gold. He expected it, of course, but it was still a shock. The thing looked like a part of his skin, as though that non-existent creature itself had settled into him. His arm felt no different, yet the scales sparkled in the sunlight like polished metal. It seemed if he touched that golden mane atop his wrist, he would surely feel each hair. He thrust his arm into the air as soon as it was bare, high, so Cooladin and his people could see. Mutters rose among the Shido, and Cooladin snarled wordlessly. The numbers around the granite outcrop were swelling as more Shido came running from their tents. Ruark stood with Hyrn and his Jindo a little upslope. They watched the Shido warily, and Rand, with an air of expectation, his uplifted arm did not lessen. Lan stood halfway between the two groups, hands resting on his sword hilt, face a thunderhead. Just as Rand began to realize the Aiel wanted something more, Egwene and the other three wise women reached him, scrambling down the mountain. The Aiel women looked out of countenance at having to hurry, and every bit as angry as Bear had been. Amice directed her glares at Cooladin, while sun-haired Melaine stared blamingly at Rand. Sianna just seemed ready to chew rocks. Egwene, with a scarf wrapped around her hair and spread over her shoulders, stared at Matt and him, half in consternation and half as though she had expected never to see them again.
"Fool man," Bear muttered. "All of the signs."
Tossing the water bag to Matt, she seized Rand's right arm and stripped back his sleeve, exposing a mirrored twin of the creature on his left forearm. Her breath caught, then came out in a long sigh. She seemed balanced on a razor edge between relief and apprehension. There was no mistaking it. She had hoped for the second marking, yet it made her afraid. Amice and the other two wise women echoed her sign almost exactly. It was odd to see Aiel fearful. Rand almost laughed, not that he was amused. Twice and twice shall he be marked. That was what the prophecies of the dragon said. A heron branded into each palm, and now these. One of the peculiar creatures, dragons, the prophecy called them, was supposed to be for remembrance lost. Rudion had certainly supplied that, the lost history of the Aiel's origins. And the other was for the price he must pay. How soon must I pay it, he wondered, and how many have to pay with me? Others always had to, even when he tried to pay alone. Apprehensive or not, Bear did not pause before shoving that arm above his head too, and proclaiming loudly,
"Behold what has never been seen before! A Ka'akarn has been chosen, a chief of chiefs. Born of a maiden, he has come with the dawn from Roydian, according to prophecy, to unite the Aiel. The fulfillment of prophecy has begun."
The reactions of the other Aiel were nothing like what Rand envisioned. Cooladin stared down at him, even more hatefully than before, if that was possible, then leaped from the outcrop and stalked up the slope to vanish into the Shido tents. The Shido themselves began to disperse, glancing at Rand with unreadable faces before drifting back to their tents. Hyrn and the warriors of the Jindo sept, hardly hesitating, did the same. In moments, only Ruark remained, his eyes troubled. Lan went over to the clan chief. From his face, the warder would just as soon not have seen Rand at all. Rand was not sure what he had expected, but surely something other than this.
"Burn me," Matt muttered.
He seemed to realize for the first time that he had the water bag in his hands. Jerking the plug free, he held the hide bag high, letting nearly as much splash over his face as into his mouth. When he finally lowered it, he looked at the markings on Rand's arms again and shook his head, repeating,
"Burn me,"
as he pushed the sloshing bag at him. Rand stared at the Aiel in consternation, but he was more than glad to drink. The first gulps hurt his throat, it was so dry.
"What happened to you?" Egwene demanded. "Did Muradin attack you?" "It is forbidden to speak of what occurs in Rudian," Bear said sharply.
"Not Muradin," Rand said. "Where's Moraine? I expected her to be the first to meet us." He rubbed his face. Black flakes of dried blood came off on his hand. "For once I won't care if she asks before she heals me."
"Me either," Matt said hoarsely.
He swayed, holding himself up with his spear, and pressed the heel of his palm against his forehead.
My brain is spinning.
Egwene grimaced.
She is still in Rudion, I suppose. But if you have finally come out, maybe she will as well. She left right after you. And Avienda. You've all been gone so long.
Moraine went to Rudion, Rand said incredulously.
And Avienda? Why did...
Abruptly he registered what else she had said.
What do you mean, so long?
This is the seventh day, she said. The seventh day since you all went down into the valley.
The water bag fell from his hands.
Siana snatched it up again before more than a little of its contents, so precious in the waste, could trickle away down the stony slope.
Rand barely noticed. 7 days. Anything could have happened in 7 days.
They could be catching up to me, figuring out what I'm planning. I have to move, fast. I have to keep ahead of them. I haven't come this far to fail.
They were all staring at him, even Ruark and Matt, concern writ large in their faces, and caution. No wonder in that. Who could say what he might do, or how sane he still was? Only Lan did not change his stony scowl.
I told you that was Avienda Rand. Bear as she was born.
Matt's voice had a painful rasp to it, and his legs looked none too steady.
How long before Moraine comes back? Rand asked.
If she had gone in at the same time, she should return soon.
If she has not returned by the 10th day, Bear replied, she will not. No one has ever returned after 10 days.
Another 3 days, maybe. 3 more days, when he had already lost 7.
Let them come now. I will not fail.
He barely kept a snarl from his face.
You can channel. One of you can, anyway. I saw how you flung Kuladin about. Will you heal Matt?
Amis and Malayne exchanged looks he could only call rueful.
Our paths have gone other ways, Amis said regretfully. There are wise ones who could do what you ask, after a fashion, but we are not among them.
What do you mean? He snapped angrily. You can channel like Aes Sedai. Why can't you heal like them?
You do not want him to go to Roydian in the first place. Do you think you can let him die from it?
I'll survive, Matt said,
but his eyes were tight with suffering. Egwene put a hand on Rand's arm.
Not all Aes Sedai can heal very well, she said in a soothing voice. The best healers are all Yellow Aja. Shiriam, the mistress of novices, cannot heal anything much more serious than a bruise or a small cut. No 2 women can have exactly the same talents or skills.
Her tone irritated him. He was not some pettish child to be smoothed down. He frowned at the wise ones. Could not, or would not, Matt and he would have to wait for Moraine. If she had not been killed by that bubble of evil, by those dust creatures, it must have dissipated by now. There had been an end to the one in Tyr.
They wouldn't have stopped her. She could channel her way through them. She knows what she's doing. She doesn't have to figure it out an inch at a time the way I do.
But then why was she not back? Why had she gone in the first place? And why had he not seen her? Foolish question. 100 people could have been in Rudion without being seen. Too many questions and no answers until she did return, he suspected. If then.
There are herbs and ointments, Siana said. Come out of the sun, and we will tend your injuries.
Out of the sun, Rand muttered. Yes.
He was being boorish, but he did not care.
Why had Moraine gone into Rudion?
He did not trust her to stop pushing him in the direction she thought best, and the Dark One take his opinions. If she was in there, could she have affected what he saw? Changed it some way? If she even suspected what he planned... He started toward the Jindo tents. Kuladin's people were not likely to offer him a resting place, but Amis turned him toward the flat farther up where the Wise One's tents stood.
They might not be comfortable with you among them just yet, she said.
Ruark, falling in beside her, nodded agreement.
Melaine glanced at Lan. This is no business of yours, Annalein. You and Ruark take Metrim and—
No, Rand broke in. I want them with me.
Partly it was because he wanted answers from the clan chief, and partly it was sheer stubbornness. These wise ones were all set to guide him around on a leash, just like Moraine. He was not about to put up with it. They looked at one another, then nodded as if acceding to a request. If they thought he would be a good boy because they gave him a sweet, they were mistaken.
I'd have thought you would be with Moraine, he said to Lan, ignoring the wise ones and their nods.
A flash of embarrassment crossed the warder's face.
The wise ones managed to hide her going until nearly sunset, he said stiffly. Then they convinced me following would serve no purpose. They said even if I did, I could not find her until she was already on her way out, and she would not need me then. I am no longer certain I should have listened.
Listened, Melaine snorted. Her gold and ivory bracelets clattered as she adjusted her shawl irritably. Trust a man to make himself sound reasonable. You would almost certainly have died and very likely killed her, too.
Melaine and I had to hold him down half the night before he would listen, Amice said. Her small smile was a touch amused, a touch wry.
Lan's face might as well have been carved from thunderclouds. Small wonder if the wise ones had used the power on him. What was Moraine doing in there?
Ruark, Rand said. How am I supposed to unite the Aiel? They don't even want to look at me.
He raised his bare forearms for a moment. The dragon's scales glittered in the harsh sunlight.
These say I am he who comes with the dawn. But everybody practically melted away as soon as I showed the things.
It is one thing to know prophecy will be fulfilled, eventually, the clan chief said slowly. Another to see that fulfillment begun before your eyes. It is said you will make the clans one people again, as long ago. But we have fought one another almost as long as we have fought the rest of the world. And there is more for some of us.
He will bind you together and destroy you. Ruark must have heard that too. And the other clan chiefs and the wise ones, if they also had entered that forest of shining glass columns, if Moraine had not arranged a special vision for him.
Does everyone see the same things inside those columns, Ruark?
No,
Melaine snapped, eyes like green steel.
Be silent or send Annalyn and Matrim away. You must go too, Egwene.
It is not permitted, Amice said, in a just slightly softer voice, to speak of what occurs within Roedion, except with those who have been there. A fraction softer, maybe.
Even then, few speak of it, and seldom.
I mean to change what is permitted and what isn't, Rand told them levelly. Become used to it.
He caught Egwene muttering about him needing his ears boxed and grinned at her.
Egwene can stay too, since she asked so nicely.
She stuck her tongue out at him, then blushed when she realized what she had done.
Change, Ruark said. You know he brings change, Amice. It is wondering what change and how that makes us like children alone in the dark. Since it must be, let it begin now. No two clan chiefs I have spoken with have seen through the exactly same eyes, Rand, or exactly the same things, until the sharing of water, and the meeting where the agreement of Roedion was made. Whether it is the same for wise ones, I do not know, but I suspect it is. I think it is a matter of bloodlines. I believe I saw through the eyes of my ancestors, and you yours.
Amice and the other wise ones glowered in grimly sullen silence. Matt and Egwene wore equally confused stares. Lan alone seemed not to be listening at all. His eyes looked inward, no doubt in worry over Moraine. Rand felt a little strange himself.
seeing through his ancestors' eyes. He had known for some time that Tamil Thor was not his real father, that he had been found as a newborn on the slopes of Dragon Mount after the last major battle of the Aiel War. A newborn with his dead mother, a maiden of the spear. He had claimed Aiel blood in demanding admittance to Rudion, but the fact of it was just now being driven home. His ancestors. Aiel. "Then you saw Rudion just begun building too," he said. "And the two Aes Sedai? You heard what one of them said?"
"He will destroy you."
"I heard." Ruark looked resigned, like a man who had learned his leg had to be cut off. "I know." Rand changed the subject. "What was the sharing of water?" The clan chief's eyebrows lifted in surprise. "You did not recognize it, but then I do not see why you should. You have not grown up with the histories. According to the oldest stories, from the day the breaking of the world began until the day we first entered the threefold land, only one people did not attack us. One people allowed us water freely when it was needed. It took us long to discover who they were. That is done with now. The pledge of peace was destroyed. The tree killers spat in our faces."
"Kyrian," Rand said. "You're talking about Kyrian and Avendor Aldera and Laemon cutting down the tree."
"Laemon is dead for his punishment," Ruark said in a flat voice. "The Oathbreakers are done with." He looked at Rand sideways. "Some, such as Culloden, take it for proof we can trust no one who is not Aiel. That is a part of why he hates you. A part of it. He will take your face and blood for lies, or claim he does." Rand shook his head. Moraine sometimes talked of the complexity of age lace, the pattern of an age, woven by the wheel of time, from the thread of human lives. If the ancestors of the Kyrianen had not allowed the Aiel to have water 3,000 years ago, then Kyrian would never have been given the right to use the silk path across the waste, with a cutting from Avendasora for a pledge. No pledge, and King Laemon would have had no tree to cut down. There would have been no Aiel War, and he could not have been born on the side of Dragonmount to be carried off and raised in the Two Rivers. How many more points like that had there been, where a single decision one way or another affected the weave of the pattern for thousands of years? 1,000 times 1,000 tiny branching points. 1,000 times that many, all twitching the pattern into a different design. He himself was a walking branching point, and maybe Matt and Perrin, too. What they did or did not do would send ripples ahead through the years, through the ages. He looked at Matt, hobbling up the slope with the aid of his spear, head down and eyes squinted in pain. The Creator could not have been thinking to set the future on the shoulders of three farm boys. "I can't drop it. I have to carry the load, whatever the cost." At the Wise One's low, wall-less tents, the women ducked inside with murmurs about water and shade. They all but pulled Matt with them. As evidence of how his head and throat hurt, he not only obeyed, he did so silently. Rand started to follow, but Lan laid a hand on his shoulder.
"Did you see her in there?" the warder asked.
"No, Lan. I'm sorry, I did not. She'll come out safe if anyone can." Lan grunted and took his hand away.
"Watch out for Culloden, Rand. I have seen his kind before. Ambition burns in his belly. He would sacrifice the world to achieve it."
"Un-Alain speaks the truth," Ruark said. "The dragons on your arms will not matter if you are dead before the clan chiefs learn of them. I will make sure some of Hyrn's Jindo are always near you until we reach Cold Rocks. Even then, Culloden will probably try to make trouble, and the Shido at least will follow him. Perhaps others too.
The prophecy of Rudian said you would be raised by those not of the blood. Yet Culloden may not be the only one to see only a wetlander.
I will try to watch my back, Rand said dryly.
In the stories, when somebody fulfilled a prophecy, everyone cried, Behold, or some such. And that was that, except for dealing with the villains. Real life did not seem to work that way. When they entered the tent, Matt was already seated on a gold-tasseled red cushion with his coat and shirt off. A woman in a cowled white robe had finished washing the blood from his face and was just beginning on his chest. Amis gripped a stone mortar between her knees, blending some ointment with a pestle, while Bear and Sianna had their heads together over herbs brewing in a pot of hot water. Melaine grimaced at Lan and Ruark, then fixed Rand with cool green eyes.
Stripped to the waist, she said curtly. The cuts on your head do not seem too bad, but let me see what has you hunched over.
She struck a small brass gong, and another white-robed woman ducked in at the back of the tent, a steaming silver basin in her hands, and cloths over her arm. Rand took a seat on a cushion, making himself sit up straight.
That's nothing to worry yourself about, he assured her.
The second woman in white knelt gracefully by his side, and resisting his efforts to take the damp cloth she wrung out in the basin, began gently washing his face. He wondered who she was. She looked Aiel, but she certainly did not act it. Her gray eyes held a determined meekness.
It is an old injury, Egwene told the sun-haired wise one. Moraine has never been able to heal it properly.
The look she gave Rand said common courtesy should have made him tell as much. From the glances that passed among the wise ones, though, he thought she had said more than enough already. A wound Aes Sedai could not heal, that was a puzzle to them. Moraine seemed to know more about him than he knew about himself, and he had a hard time dealing with her. Maybe it would go easier with the wise ones if they had to guess about him. Matt winced as Amis began rubbing her ointment into the slashes on his chest. If it felt anything like it smelled, Rand thought he had cause to wince. Bear shoved a silver cup at Matt. Drink, young man. Timson root and silverleaf will help your headaches if anything can. He did not hesitate before gulping it down. A shudder and a twisted face followed.
Tastes like the inside of my boots.
But he gave her a seated bow, formal enough for a tyrant, except for his being shirtless, and only spoiled a bit by his sudden grin.
I thank you, wise one, and I won't ask if you added anything just to give it that memorable taste.
Bear and Sianna's soft laughter might have come because they had or because they had not. But it seemed that, as usual, Matt had found a way to get on the good side of the women. Even Melaine gave him a brief smile.
Ruark, Rand said, if Culloden thinks to make difficulties, I need to jump ahead of him. How do I go about telling the other clan chiefs? About me? About these?
He shifted his dragon-twined arms. The white-robed woman at his side, cleaning the long gash in his hair now, deliberately avoided looking at them.
There is no set formality, Ruark said. How could there be for a thing that will happen only once? When there must be a meeting between clan chiefs, there are places where something like the Peace of Rudian holds. The closest to Cold Rocks, the closest to Rudian, is Al-Kher Dal. You could show proofs to the clan and sept chiefs there.
Al-Kher Dal, Matt said, giving it a subtly different sound. The Golden Bowl?
Ruark nodded.
A round canyon, though there is nothing golden about it. There is a ledge at one end, and a man who stands there can be heard by anyone in the canyon without raising his voice.
Rand frowned at the dragons on his forearms. He was not the only one to have been marked in some way in Rudian. Matt no longer spoke a few words of the old tongue now and then without knowing what he was saying. He understood, since Rudian, though he did not appear to realize it. Egwene was watching Matt, thoughtfully. She had spent too much time with Aes Sedai.
Ruark,
Can you send messengers out to the clan chiefs? He said. How long will it take to ask them all to Alcair Dahl? What will it take to make sure they come?
Messengers will take weeks, and more weeks for everyone to gather. Ruark's gesture took in all four wise ones. They can speak to every clan chief in his dreams in one night, to every sept chief, and every wise one, to make sure no man takes it for just a dream.
I appreciate your confidence that we can move mountains, shade of my heart, Amice said wryly, settling herself beside Rand with her ointment. But that does not make it so. It would take several nights to do what you suggest, with little rest in them.
Rand caught her hand as she started to rub the sharp-smelling mixture on his cheek. Will you do it?
Are you so eager to destroy us? She demanded,
then bit her lip vexedly as the white-cowled woman on Rand's other side started. Malaine clapped her hands twice.
Leave us, she said sharply.
And the women in white bowed their way out with basins and cloths.
You goad me like a needle burr next to the skin, Amice told Rand bitterly. Whatever they are told, those women will talk now of what they should not know.
She pulled her hand free, began rubbing in the ointment with perhaps more energy than was necessary. It stung worse than it smelled.
I do not mean to goad you, Rand said, but there is no time. The Forsaken are loose, Amice, and if they find out where I am or what I plan...
The Aiel women did not seem surprised. Had they known already? 9 still live. Too many. And those that don't want to kill me think they can use me. I have no time. If I knew a way to bring all the clan chiefs here now and make them accept me, I'd use it.
What is it you plan?
Amice's voice was as stony as her face.
Will you ask, tell, the chiefs to come to Alcair Dahl?
For a long moment, she met his stare. When she finally nodded, it was grudging. Begrudged or not, some of the tension went out of him. There was no way to win back 7 lost days, but perhaps he could avoid losing more. Moraine, still in Rudion, with Avienda, held him here yet, though. He could not simply abandon her.
You knew my mother, he said.
Egwene leaned forward, as intent as he, and Matt shook his head. Amisa's hand paused on his face.
I knew her.
Tell me about her, please. She shifted her attention to the slash above his ear. If a frown could have healed, he would not have needed her ointment. Finally, she said,
Shail's story, as I know it, begins when I was still Fardarai's Mai. More than a year before I gave up the spear. A number of us had ranged almost to the Dragon Wall together. One day we saw a woman, a golden-haired young wetlander in silks, with pack horses and a fine mare to ride. A man we would have killed, of course, but she had no weapon beyond a simple knife at her belt. Some wanted to run her back to the Dragon Wall naked.
Egwene blinked. She seemed continually surprised at how hard the Aiel were. Amice continued without pause, yet she seemed to be searching determinedly for something.
Curious, we followed, day by day, without letting her see. Her horses died, her food ran out, her water. But she did not turn back. She stumbled on afoot until finally she fell and could not rise. We decided to give her water and ask her story. She was near death, and it was a full day before she could speak.
Her name was Shail, Rand said when she hesitated. Where was she from? Why did she come here?
Shail, Bear said, was the name she took for herself. She never gave another in the time I knew her. In the old tongue, it would mean the woman who is dedicated.
Matt nodded agreement, not seeming to realize what he had done. Lan eyed him thoughtfully over a silver cup of water.
There was a bitterness in Shail in the beginning, she finished.
Sitting back on her heels beside Rand, Amis nodded. She spoke of a child abandoned, a son she loved, a husband she did not love. Where, she would not say. I do not think she ever forgave herself for leaving the child. She would tell little beyond what she had to. It was for us she had been searching, for maidens of the spear. An Aes Sedai called Jitara Moroso, who had the foretelling, had told her that disaster would befall her land and her people, perhaps the world, unless she went to dwell among the maidens of the spear, telling no one of her going. She must become a maiden, and she could not return to her own land until the maidens had gone to Tarvalin. She shook her head wonderingly. You must understand how it sounded then. The maidens go to Tarvalin. No Aiel had crossed the Dragon Wall since the day we first reached the Threefold Land. It would be another 4 years before Lehmann's crime brought us into the wetlands. And certainly no one not Aiel had ever become a maiden of the spear. Some of us thought her mad from the sun. But she had a stubborn will, and somehow we found ourselves agreeing to let her try. Jitara Moroso, an Aes Sedai with the foretelling. Somewhere he had heard that name, but where? And he had a brother, a half-brother. Growing up, he had wondered what it would be like to have a brother or a sister. Who and where? But Amis was going on. Almost every girl dreams of becoming a maiden and learns at least the rudiments of bow and spear, of fighting with hands and feet. Even so, those who take the final step and wed the spear discover they know nothing. It was harder for Shail. The bow she knew well, but she had never run as far as a mile or lived on what she could find. A 10-year-old girl could beat her, and she did not even know what plants indicate water. Yet she persevered. In a year, she had spoken her vows to the spear, become a maiden, adopted into the Chumai sept of the Tardad. And eventually, she had gone to Tarvalin with the maidens, to die in the slopes of Dragonmount. Half an answer, and leaving new questions. If he could only have seen her face. You have something of her in your features, Sianna said, as though reading his thoughts. She had settled herself cross-legged with a small silver cup of wine. Less of Janduin. Janduin, my father. Yes, Sianna said. He was a clan chief of the Tardad then, the youngest in memory. Yet he had a way to him, a power. People listened to him and would follow him, even those not of his clan. He ended the blood feud between Tardad and Nakai after 200 years, and made alliance not only with the Nakai, but with the Rain, and the Rain were not far short of blood feud. He very nearly ended the feud between Sharad and Goshin as well, and might have, had Lehmann not cut down the tree. Young as he was, it was he who led the Tardad and Nakai, the Rain and Sharad, to seek Lehmann's blood price. Was. So he was dead now, too. Egwene wore sympathy on her face. Rand ignored it. He did not want sympathy. How could he feel loss for people he had never known? Yet he did. How did Janduin die? The wise ones exchanged hesitant glances. At last, Amis said, It was the beginning of the 3rd year of the search for Lehmann, when Shail found herself with child. By the laws, she should have returned to the Threefold Land. A maiden is forbidden to carry the spear while she carries a child. But Janduin could forbid her nothing. Had she asked the moon on a necklace, he would have tried to give it to her. So she stayed. And in the last fight, before Tarvalin, she was lost, and the child was lost. Janduin could not forgive himself for not making her obey the law. He gave up his place as clan chief, Bear said. No one had ever done that before.
He was told it could not be done, but he simply walked away. He went north with the young men to hunt Trollocs and Myrdrel in the Blight. It is a thing wild young men do, and maidens with less sense than goats. Those who returned said he was killed by a man, though. They said Jonduin claimed this man looked like Shail, and he would not raise his spear when the man ran him through.
Dead, then. Both dead.
He would never lose his love for Tam, never stop thinking of him as father, but he wished he could have seen Jonduin and Shail just once. Egwene tried to comfort him, of course, the way women did. There was no use trying to make her understand that what he had lost was something he had never had. For memories of parents, he had Tamal Thor's quiet laugh, and dimmer remembrance of Kariel Thor's gentle hands. That was as much as any man could want or need. She seemed disappointed, even a little upset with him, and the wise ones appeared to share the feeling to one degree or another. From Bear's openly disapproving frown to Melaine's sniff and ostentatious shifting of her shawl. Women never understood. Ruark and Lan and Matt did. They left him alone, as he wanted. For some reason, he did not feel like eating when Melaine had food brought, so he went to lie at the edge of the tent with one of the cushions under his elbow, where he could watch the slope and the fog-shrouded city. The sun blasted the valley and the surrounding mountains, burning the shadows. The air that eddied into the tent seemed to come from an open oven. After a time, Matt came over, wearing a clean shirt. He sat beside Rand without speaking, peering into the valley below, the strange spear propped on his knee. Now and again he felt at the cursive script carved into the black haft. "How is your head?" Rand asked, and Matt jumped.
"It doesn't hurt anymore."
He jerked his fingers away from the carving, folded his hands deliberately in his lap.
"Not as much, anyway. Whatever that was they mixed up, it did the trick."
He fell silent again, and Rand led him. He did not want to talk either. He could almost feel time passing, grains of sand in an hourglass dropping one by one ever so slowly. But everything seemed to tremble, too. The sands, ready to explode in a torrent. Foolish. He was just being affected by the shimmering heat haze rising from the mountain's bare rock. The clan chiefs could not reach Alcair Dal one day sooner if Moraine appeared before him that instant. They were only a part, anyway. And maybe the least important part. A little while later, he noticed Lan squatting easily atop the same granite outcrop Culloden had used, paying no mind to the sun. The warder was watching the valley, too. Another man who did not want to talk. Rand refused a midday meal, too, though Egwene and the wise ones took turns trying to make him eat. They seemed to take his refusal calmly enough, but when he suggested returning to Roydian to look for Moraine, and Avienda for that matter, Melaine exploded.
"You fool man. No man can go twice to Rudion. Even you would not come back alive. Oh, starve if you want to."
She threw half a round loaf of bread at his head. Matt caught it out of the air and calmly began eating.
"Why do you want me to live?" Rand asked her. "You know what that Aes Sedai said in front of Rudion. I will destroy you. Why aren't you plotting with Culloden to kill me?"
Matt choked, and Egwene planted her fists on her hips, ready to lecture, but Rand kept his attention on Melaine. Instead of answering, she glared at him and left the tent. It was Bear who spoke.
"Everyone thinks they know the prophecy of Roydian, but what they know is what wise ones and clan chiefs have told them for generations. Not lies, but not the whole truth. The truth might break the strongest man."
"What is the whole truth?" Rand insisted.
She glanced at Matt and said,
"In this case, the whole truth, the truth known only to wise ones and clan chiefs before this, is that you are our doom. Our doom and our salvation. Without you, no one of our people will live beyond the last battle. Perhaps not even until the last battle. That is prophecy and truth. With you, he shall spill out the blood of those who call themselves Aiel as water on sand, and he shall break them as dried twigs. Yet the remnant of a remnant shall he save, and they shall live. A hard prophecy, but this has never been a gentle land.
She met his gaze without flinching. A hard land and a hard woman.
He rolled back over and returned to watching the valley. The others left, except for Matt.
In the mid-afternoon, he finally spotted a figure climbing the mountain, scrambling up wearily. Avienda. Matt had been right. She was bare as she was born. And showing some effects of the sun, too, Aiel or not. It was only her hands and face that were sun-darkened, and the rest of her looked decidedly red. He was glad to see her. She disliked him, but only because she thought he had mistreated Elaine. The simplest of motives. Not for prophecy or doom, not for the dragons on his arms, or because he was the dragon reborn. For a simple human reason. He almost looked forward to those cool, challenging stares. When she saw him, she froze, and there was nothing cool in her blue-green eyes. Her gaze made the sun seem cold. He should have been burned to ash on the spot.
Rand? Matt said quietly. I don't think I would turn my back on her if I were you.
A tired sigh escaped him. Of course, if she had been into those glass columns, she knew.
Bear, Malaine, the others, they had all had years to grow used to it.
For Avienda, it was a fresh wound with no scab.
No wonder she hates me now.
The wise ones scurried out to meet Avienda, hurrying her away into another tent. The next time Rand saw her, she wore a bulky brown skirt and loose white blouse with a shawl looped around her arms. She did not look very happy about the clothes. She saw him watching, and the fury on her face, the sheer animal rage, was enough to make him turn away. Shadows were beginning to stretch to the far mountains by the time Moraine appeared, falling and staggering back to her feet as she climbed, as sunburned as Avienda. He was startled to see she had no clothes on either. Women were crazy, that was all. Lan leaped from the stone outcrop and ran down to her. Scooping her into his arms, he ran back upslope, perhaps faster than he had descended, cursing and shouting for the wise ones by turns. Moraine's head lolled on his shoulder. The wise ones came out to take her, Malaine physically barring his way when he tried to follow them into the tent. Lan was left stalking up and down outside, pounding a fist into his hand. Rand rolled onto his back and stared up at the low tent roof. 3 days saved. He should have felt glad Moraine and Avienda were back and safe, but his relief was all for days saved. Time was everything. He had to be able to choose his own ground. Maybe he still could.
What are you going to do now? Matt asked.
Something you should like. I'm going to break the rules.
I meant, are you going to get something to eat? Me, I'm hungry.
In spite of himself, Rand laughed. Something to eat. He did not care if he ever ate again. Matt stared at him as if he were crazy, and that only made him laugh harder. Not crazy. For the first time, somebody was going to learn what it meant that he was the dragon reborn. He was going to break the rules in a way no one expected.